rosters are being finalized, players are being put on waivers, sent down, they're being cut, cap restraints are being put into place, provinces, states are getting ready. 116 consecutive days with hockey. The 2021 NHL season is upon us. Episode 39 of the Second Thoughts Podcast. Let's go. Oh, the eve of the 2021 season. It's like Christmas Eve before the big day. Hockey is right here with us. Welcome to the Second Thoughts Podcast. Kyle Gamard, as always, is your host. And the caption of this podcast said it all. Game on. Puck drop is moments away. We are going to see 10 battles of Alberta. We're going to see Pittsburgh versus Washington 8 times. We're going to see some of the best rivalries get renewed with Boston and Philadelphia. The Rangers, the Islanders going at it like crazy. And I'm so excited. All of this talk, all of these rumors, all these conversations that are being had are all finally leading up to the regular season, and thankfully that there is a regular season. I am just fired up and ready to go. If you'd like to stream along, you can do so on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. If you'd like to leave a review, send me a message, a note, things that you'd like more of, things that you think are just spot on, by all means do so. If you're following me along on social media, I would greatly appreciate it too on Instagram and Twitter at SecondThoughtsP. Final cuts are being made to franchises right now, to organizations. Player signings are actually happening too. Some players that were brought in to PTOs, professional tryouts, they're being signed. We'll talk about some of the bigger signings there. The final divisional breakdown before things kick off tomorrow. We've got the final three teams in the North Division, the Montreal Canadiens, the Ottawa Senators, and the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, we got to start too with a couple players evidently calling it quits. And, you know, on the last episode of the podcast, you know, we talked about this individual taking a leave of absence. We didn't know the reasons for it, sorry. He just said that he needed to take some time off and just due to personal matters. We didn't know what it was. But evidently, Corey Crawford has announced his retirement from the National Hockey League after 10 seasons and appearing in 488 regular season games. This was posted on our Second Thoughts Podcast Twitter and Instagram feeds. He said, quote, "I've been fortunate to have a long playing career professionally for a living. I wanted to continue my career, but believe I've given all I can to the game of hockey, and I've decided that it is time to retire." He said later on in a statement, he just wants to thank the New Jersey Devils organization for understanding and supporting the decision, because you have to remember, he signed with them in the offseason after spending the first majority of his career, I believe the first 14 or 10 years of his career with the Chicago Blackhawks. Like I said, this past Friday, Crawford said he was taking an indefinite leave of absence, and then he signed a two-year, $7.8 million contract with New Jersey. And there will be no cap casualties for New Jersey too, because it is a retirement. But have a career, first of all. I want to say congratulations, and I hope everything is okay with Corey Crawford. You see players all the time kind of force themselves into retirement. It looks like here that, you know, Corey took a step back after signing that contract, talked with his family, said, what's more important right now, my playing career or my health, my mental health, my well-being? I had a buddy of mine actually text me saying that, you know, you got to remember Crawford over the last couple of years, you kind of forget this, had gone through some injuries, including some concussions. He was getting over a lot of different head injuries, things that, you know, you can't calculate. You know, it's not like a broken, you know, a broken bone. You know, broken bone gets fixed in 4 to 6 weeks. Boom, you're good as new. You can get back on the ice. With head injuries, you know, those things affect people in different ways. Kind of the same thing mentally as when players went back into the bubble. We saw some players elevate their games in the bubble. We saw some players take it a little bit more harshly, and their play started to decline a little bit. So it's nice to see that Corey Crawford decided to leave hockey, the game, and the National Hockey League on his own mentality, his own power, his own will. He walked away from the game and wasn't forced out of it. Going back, I mean, just integral roles with the Chicago Blackhawks. He won two Stanley Cups in 2013 and 2015. He was one of the league's best goalies, if you remember it not, for the last, honestly, decade. I mean, there were parts towards, you know, the last Olympics before, you know, they were allowing players to head back there. Either it was this past Olympics or 4 years prior, but, you know, they had talked about Corey Crawford as being one of the three goaltenders in the men. I think it was like Carey Price, Corey Crawford, and like, I don't know, Braden Holtby at the time. This might have been like 2016 or so, but just... Yeah, he was a guy that he's a two-time All-Star. He won two William M. Jennings trophies. He finishes with a career save percentage. Think about this for a second. Corey Crawford, a guy who, you know, you kind of think about, had some good teams in front of him for sure. But over a decade of playing with Chicago, .918 save percentage and a .245 goals against average. He allowed less than 2.5 goals per game, which in today's game is incredible. He had a record of 260 wins, 162 losses, and 53 overtime and shootout losses. You know, just a huge congratulations to Corey on the career that he had. I can't imagine it being an easy decision to walk away from the game because, you know, you got to think about it too. When you sign a two-year contract, your intention is to play two more years in the NHL. And for him to take a second, take a step back, realize what's important to him and come to that conclusion, it took incredible guts, incredible courage. And I just want to salute Corey on a spectacular career. I always have a soft spot for goaltenders and... You know, he took a little bit of flack. I remember Antti Niemi won the first Stanley Cup when Chicago won those three in like 6 years. And then Corey Crawford came in after Niemi, and Corey Crawford just stepped right in and became honestly a vital part of that organization and a backbone to those teams and their deep playoff runs. You got to remember too, like they had conference championship games where they went all the way and lost to, you know, the LA Kings. They had intense series against the Nashville Predators. Corey Crawford was a big reason a lot of times that Chicago was able to move on. A lot of people talk about Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Duncan Keith and three other guys who have won, you know, Conn Smythe trophies as being the MVP of the playoffs. But there were a couple times where you'd have to put Corey Crawford in consideration for those Stanley Cup runs. And he earned every single accolade he achieved in his career. And a huge congratulations going out to Corey Crawford. And another Canadian called it quits as well after 17 seasons in the National Hockey League. Left-hand defenseman Jay Bouwmeester calling it a career. He confirmed this with The Athletic's Pierre LeBrun yesterday. He said the defenseman played 17 seasons, won a Stanley Cup with the St. Louis Blues just a couple of years ago. He was a guy that, you know, when you get to 15-plus years, you start thinking, you know, is this guy ever going to win a cup? And the fact that he was able to win it in his second last season of his career is just absolutely remarkable. You know, yes, he is 37 years of age, but you have to remember back, you know, in February, Bouwmeester collapsed on the St. Louis Blues bench and suffered a cardiac episode during a game in late February. It ended up being the last game of his career. You know, and when Pierre LeBrun asked him about, you know, why he retired in the offseason, he goes, "Oh yeah, I knew I was done essentially when it happened, to be quite honest." That's what he said. He's feeling okay now, but, you know, same thing, right? He probably had an opportunity to come back in and play similarly to Corey Crawford, but he took a step back. He evaluated what was important to him, his health, and he just said, listen, like, he's going to stay active, but, you know, he just thinks that probably calling it now in the NHL was a good decision. He's able to leave under his own circumstances. He collected 424 points. He played over 1,200 games in the National Hockey League. He spent seasons with the St. Louis Blues, Calgary Flames, Florida Panthers. He was a third overall pick all the way back in 2002. You know, played on Team Canada. I believe he's an Olympic gold medalist. Like, this guy has achieved almost every accolade. He is one of the smoothest skaters. I remember a time when he played, he had a four-year stint with the Calgary Flames, and I have a little bit of a soft spot because I like the Flames when I grew up as a kid. I love Jerome McGinley. I love Mika Kiprusoff as a goaltender. I remember when Jay Bouwmeester went over to Calgary. It was like 2008 or something, and I remember watching him, and all the broadcasters could talk about was how incredible his skating was. And, you know, if you're an average fan listening right now, you know, all the guys probably look the same when they skate. A lot of guys will make it, you know, they show a lot of hustle when they skate, right? They're working hard, you know, they're busting ass to get all the way down the ice to forecheck or get back to get the puck. With Jay Bouwmeester, he was one of the most seamless skaters you'll ever watch in your you'll ever watch in the National Hockey League. If you ever want to go back and look at some footage, some highlights of Jay Bouwmeester, he is one of the smoothest skating players to have ever played the game. And what made a big part is the fact that he was able to play for 17 seasons at such a high level. He just had this incredible skating ability. Was never a guy that cared about points, goals, assists. Was always so good defensively. You know, it was playing, you know, top minutes for a lot of his career, 25 plus minutes a night, almost half the game. And it looked effortless to the guy. And he had an Ironman streak for some time too. I don't have the numbers specifically in front of me, but he played, I'm pretty sure he played somewhere along the lines of, like, he had an Ironman streak where he played 700 consecutive games without getting hurt or without missing a game. He was a guy who you could always rely upon, you could always count on regardless. And for Jay Bouwmeester to walk away, 17 seasons, almost 500 points, over 1,200 games, Olympic medals, and a Stanley Cup champion. Congratulations to Jay Bouwmeester and Corey Crawford, two incredible players for the better part of a decade. Jay Bouwmeester, 17 years. Congrats to you both, and all the best wishes moving forward in your lives. All right, so as I mentioned a little bit earlier on in the podcast, you know, teams are making cuts, teams are finalizing players' contracts, players that are signed to professional tryouts are getting signed. We'll get to those a little bit later. And some guys are actually back at camp, and one of those players includes Matthew Barzal of the New York Islanders. He inked a 3-year, $21 million contract over the weekend. It's a 3-year contract, averaging $7 million. Barzal will earn $4 million this season, $7 million next year, and $10 million in the following campaign for an AAV of $7 million. This is TSN's Darren Dreger. This is from Matthew Barzal. He said, "Now being paid a substantial amount, I know consistency is a huge thing." He said, "There's no nights off. He's got to go in each and every night and perform at the highest level." That's what he said. The two sides back and forth, there were rumors going around about Barzal inking a 6-year contract extension. But I just think, you know, with the flat cap, with COVID, with the unknown of how much each team is going to be able to spend moving forward. I mean, there's reports too of the NHL. Gary Bettman came out and he said that, you know, this season he anticipates the NHL losing roughly $1 billion in revenue, which is its own issue in itself. I think there's ways for them to make a little bit of money back, but that's what they're foreseeing right now. 3 years just seem to make the most sense. Like I said, when you don't have a contract, you can't go to camp. So Matthew Barzal, up until Saturday, hadn't been to training camp. He hadn't been able to step foot on the ice, lace up his skates, do anything. I think he could train off the ice, but I think that was about it. So nice to know that. Just days before the NHL season gets underway, the Islanders get one of their star players back. He's only 23 years of age. He had 60 points this past season in 68 games. He is an incredible player. I talked about Jay Bouwmeester being such an incredible skater. Barzal is not only one of the fastest players in the NHL, but skating-wise, he has this ability to move seamlessly along the ice where every other player looks like they're working 10 times as hard just to keep up with him. He is a game breaker. He's a difference maker for this New York Islanders team. He is a dynamic piece that, honestly, they need. They went all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They pushed the Tampa Bay Lightning to, I think, six games actually. I think it was one of the few series that I actually called not only the team right, but the amount of games right. But Barzal was a big reason that series went six. You know, the Islanders were a tough out. Barzal's an integral piece. They brought over another guy in Jean-Gabriel Pageau. He's like their second or third line center. The Islanders, they pride themselves on being a deep team, on being a hardworking team, on being a very well-structured team. You know, when you watch hockey, sometimes there doesn't seem to be a lot of structure when you play. But, you know, the Islanders are a very well-coached, well-structured team, and Barzal has really grown as a player. He's drafted 5 years ago and he's only 23. He's only going to get better. I know it's a little risky of a move because when you sign a 3-year contract extension, I think only up until you're about 25 years old do you have the ability to be a restricted free agent, which basically means that, you know, only the team that you are currently signed to can put out offers to re-sign you. You know, after that age, you know, if your contract's over, you're an unrestricted free agent. You can sign with anybody you want at that point. It makes things a little bit harder, but, you know, the Islanders don't got to worry about that at least for 3 years. They've got their guy locked up. 3-year, $21 million contract. This was a crazy story that kind of came to light last night, if not this morning. And, you know, this story kind of goes along the lines of saying it doesn't matter how much money you make in this world. It's all about money management. If you can't manage your money well, if you can't spread it out, if you can't realize and put money into savings, it doesn't matter how much money you make in this world. And San Jose Sharks forward Evander Kane has unfortunately filed for bankruptcy with $26.8 million worth of debt. This is from The Athletic's Daniel Kaplan. Now, I'm not going to go too far into this story because I think this is an incredibly personal story that, you know, people have money problems all the time. I mean, I have money problems. You know, you might be listening having money problems right now. Maybe not to the tune of $26 million, but you know, a couple thousand dollars in debt, 10 grand in debt, whatever the case may be, could be even more than that. You know, Kane has, you know, reportedly he's got assets of about $10.2 million from three houses, but, you know, there's a lot of it that still has to make up. He's also, you know, he may not play this season due to COVID-19 pandemic and the birth of his first child. I mean, everybody has these issues and these complications that come up in life. And, you know, again, not to get too far into it, but apparently there is a large gambling debt due to Evander Kane. But, you know, he signed a 7-year contract back in 2018 worth $49 million. He's earned $52 million so far in 11 NHL seasons. He's projected to make even more, but you know, you'd think just playing out the seasons and slowly paying off that debt would be the best thing. But I mean, with COVID-19, with a kid, I mean, it just, I don't want to get too far into it again. You know, there hasn't been a decision up until this point. I mean, I've checked my phone. I haven't seen an update yet from Evander Kane. So as of this point, it looks like he might still be playing, but you know, he is in strong consideration of not playing. I just hope that Evander can, you know, work these things out, get that debt paid off and focus on the important things in life and being a father, and saving some money for his kid's future, his family, himself. I can't speak on behalf of that because I'm not a father. I don't have that experience. So I have no idea how. I'm not going to try and relate to him in any way, shape, or form, but I just hope that he's able to resolve the situation the best he can. He can sit down with his family, his accountant, whatever the case may be, and figure it out because, you know, he only signed that deal 2 years ago. So he has 5 years left on that contract at $49 million, and he makes an average of $7 million. So if you take $14 million off of $49 million, you know, you're still left with $35 million to be left on the table. So hopefully he can continue playing, get back into the swing of things. He is a dynamic two-way player. He's physical. He's incredibly hard to play against. I believe at one point he was a 30 goal scorer in this league. So he's not a nobody player. You know, there's a reason he's making $7 million. He's a guy you can bank on for 20 to 25 plus goals each and every year. He's physical. He brings tenacity. He can change the game when he wants to. He's highly touted still player. He's still relatively young. I believe he's under 30. So hopefully Kane can resolve this issue and get back to playing hockey and just get back to simpler things moving forward. The St. Louis Blues making things official, and honestly, when you saw it happening, it was only a matter of time. It was only until once rosters were finalized and money was moved around that this player was going to get signed to a deal. But Mike Hoffman signs a 1-year, $4 million contract with the St. Louis Blues. This deal just got made yesterday. If you remember, Mike Hoffman previously signed a professional tryout with the team back on December 27th. Mike Hoffman spent 2 seasons in Florida, 31 years of age. He had incredible goal totals in 2 seasons. He scored 65 times in 151 games and 64 assists, basically breaking it down, 30-plus goals and 30-plus assists in back-to-back years. He was one of the most sought-after free agents this offseason. He has had 20 or more goals over the last 6 seasons. And he's been one of the league's most consistent scorers, you know, and this is involving some of the best scorers in the NHL. Now, why would you think it took so long for a guy like Mike Hoffman to sign a contract, you ask? There were a lot of complications with COVID-19, with the pandemic, with the flat cap and the cap not rising like it was supposed to be anticipated. The cap apparently was going to be going up from, I think it was 85 million or whatever it's at now, to almost 89 million they were suggesting at one point. That would have given teams a lot more room cap-wise to sign players and give them a little bit more money. Mike Hoffman was a guy who was going to command a little bit more money just due to his pedigree. So the consensus was that he was going to go to a contender, sign a one-year deal for about $3 or $4 million, score a bunch of goals. You know, I talked about him potentially going to a team like Detroit, team with a lot of cap. If he wanted to make some money, you could sign a one-year deal there, score a bunch of goals, and better yourself for the next pay grade. He wants to go to contender, though, and St. Louis was a team who's going through a lot right now. They just had a defenseman retire. They had a forward in Alex Steen retire. One of their top scorers in Vladimir Tarasenko, a guy who has scored 40-plus goals before. He's dealing with injuries dating all the way back to last year. He might not be able to go. So there are some holes for St. Louis. And you have to remember, just a couple years ago, they were the Stanley Cup champions. So this is a team that has very high, sky-high expectations. They've lost their captain. They've had two players retire on them and another player injured. They're looking for holes to fill. They have gaps in their lineup. This was a perfect opportunity to bring a guy like Mike Hoffman in who can, maybe not to Tarasenko's level, but score 20, 25 goals in 56 games this season, make a significant impact, play on the team's top power play line, give himself a one-year deal. He still makes $4 million, which is pretty good. And if he has an awesome season, it just sets him up moving forward for an even bigger payday. The fit makes sense for both teams. St. Louis just seemed to be an ideal landing spot. Too many holes in the roster. Hoffman just seems to fit that need just perfectly. Good for him. Good for St. Louis. Be nice to see St. Louis, you know, be another team that goes on another run this season. Let's move on here. And, you know, with players signing, it means that other players, unfortunately, are placed on waivers. And a lot of players, actually, some big names put on waivers. And not crazy big, but nevertheless, some fairly big names, and actually a couple guys who were just signed this offseason. Two of the names that headline Monday's waiver list include Louis Erickson, winger on the Vancouver Canucks, and Corey Perry, just recently signed right winger to the Montreal Canadiens. So Corey Perry signs a one-year $700,000 contract. Habs fans are all cheering and thinking that this is going to be the year. They go on a deep cup run, and for some reason Corey Perry was going to be the player that was going to get them there, and he goes on waivers. Now, I understand the reason that he's put on waivers is to be put on the taxi squad. So if you're unfamiliar with that, the way that the NHL season is going to work, because there could be players that get infected or get exposed to COVID-19, you have a taxi squad, so an emergency squad of players that you can call up or send down at any time. It's not going to go against your cap, and that's where Corey Perry's going to go. I remember when I talked about it, you know, we'll get into Montreal a little bit later too with, you know, their divisional breakdown, but they've got three guys at right wing who are all capable of playing top 6 minutes. I mean, you've got Brendan Gallagher, who's a heart and soul player. He's like, honestly, he's kind of like a little Ty Domi. He's feisty. He's kind of like a Brad Marchand. He's feisty. He's agitating. He works his tail off, and he's a really good player too. Then you just traded for Josh Anderson, a right-hand big right winger, who, you know, in the past has scored 25 to 27 goals this past season coming off of a big injury, hopefully can get back to health, you know. And then as you look a little bit more on the right side, they signed Tyler Toffoli, who's a right winger who came over from the Vancouver Canucks, another 20 plus goal scorer. So I'm looking at Montreal's roster, I'm like, where is he going to fit? I mean, you could sign him and put him on the fourth line, but I doubt that's what you wanted to do. Now, he was kind of playing up and down when he played in Dallas this past season with the Dallas Stars on their Stanley Cup run. Now, maybe it made a lot of sense, but I just think with the way that team is constructed, they don't want him on the fourth line. No, the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. The guy had 5 goals in the entire regular season last year. You know, I see everybody saying that he's built for the playoffs, but, you know, it's just a guy that gets put on the taxi squad. And that goes for a lot of players here. I didn't want to get, you know, too carried away there. But Montreal Canadiens also putting veteran forward Michael Frolik on waivers. Canadiens signing both players this past season to $750,000 deals. Tampa Bay Lightning, they waived 6 players this offseason, including centerman Tyler Johnson, who they originally waived all the way back during the summer, and defenseman Luke Shen, who they brought back on a one-year contract as well. They placed 3 other additional players on waivers in the purpose of sending them to their farm team, the AHL. The Calgary Flames waiving defenseman Oliver Kylington. That's from Elliott Friedman. The Winnipeg Jets placing forward Matthew Perreault and defenseman Lucas Sabiza on waivers. Elsewhere, the Edmonton Oilers waiving 5 players. Toronto Maple Leafs waiving a few players as well, including forward Pierre Engvall, who just signed a two-year extension this past season at, I believe, one or just over $1 million. Now, a lot of people were thinking that he was fast. He was great on the third, fourth lines. A stat came out about Pierre Engvall. 1 point in his last 25 NHL games. So clearly not cutting it. That team is very deep. But the full list of players who were waived are up on the Second Thoughts podcast Instagram page. I've shared it up there and the link that takes you to the page to see every team if you want to go check that out. Let's finish here with a good news story before we get into the next one. But I want to talk about this here. And the Philadelphia Flyers, you know, they had a great run last year. Beat the Montreal Canadiens, made it all the way, I believe, to the conference semifinals. But, you know, just a team that really grew, got their goaltending situation intact, defense looked good, scoring is very deep. And now they're about to get another player to the roster. I mean, they already had a really incredible story last year with Oscar Lindbaum. If you don't know that story, Oscar Lindbaum was diagnosed with cancer, had to miss the majority of that season, suited up in the postseason for Philadelphia when he was deemed fit, ready to play, and it just made everybody's hearts just melt in them. And another incredible story, Nolan Patrick will be in the lineup for the first time in over 21 months in the season opener against the Pittsburgh Penguins tomorrow night. Nolan Patrick, just 22 years of age, missed all of last season due to a migraine disorder. And, you know, has been skating on the ice and finally told the Philadelphia Flyers team that he's felt good, that he's set and he's ready to return. He said, quote, he said, he made a couple mistakes out there. My energy level felt good. Thought our line created a few scoring chances. You know, the classic NHL player response. But the fact that he said he's feeling good, he was on a line center. He was centering James Van Riemsdyk and Jacob Voracek. And this is just incredible. So all the way back, he was the second overall pick in the 27 NHL draft. But he's been through a slew of injuries. He had a tough injury. You know, he's had sports hernia injuries. He's had this migraine injury and has just been a guy that's been banged up and beat up. So the fact that he's feeling good, he's feeling healthy, he's going to get into the starting lineup. He's going to be centering James Van Riemsdyk, who at one point was a 30 goal scorer. Jake Voracek, another really good winger. This is, it's just another incredible story. And honestly, another weapon for the Philadelphia Flyers. They get another guy back, you know, from an amazing story. But nevertheless, this is a hockey player. This is a human being. They get a really big piece to their team, their locker room back. And hopefully he can, you know, get a little bit luckier with the injury bug. And hopefully it doesn't catch him for some time. Can kind of cement himself, get comfortable playing. I mean, you've probably experienced it before. Whenever you twist your ankle doing something, even if it's just at work, right? All you're thinking about now is the ankle, and you can't focus on work. You can't focus on this, focus on that. If you're playing beer league hockey, flag football, right? You sustain a little injury, all of a sudden you have to either miss a little bit of it or just, you know, things are off because you're hobbled a little bit. You know, it makes a big difference when you're hobble free, you can focus on work, you don't have anything else distracting you. I really hope that's the case for Nolan Patrick. He was an incredibly sought after player in the draft. There's a reason he went second overall. If he can allow himself, hopefully now he has the ability to play a little bit, get some steam under him. I really hope for a good season from Nolan Patrick. And I'm going to be honest, I think that's everything I wanted to cover. We will get now into the final divisional breakdowns before puck drop on the 2021 NHL regular season. Let's get into it. So Friday's episode of the podcast, I started with four Canadian teams in the North Division, mostly the teams that were primarily out west last year. That'd be the Edmonton Oilers, the Calgary Flames, the Vancouver Canucks, and the Winnipeg Jets. All of those teams, if you want to listen to those divisional breakdowns, make sure you go back and listen to the last episode of the podcast, episode number 38. But, you know, the all-Canadian division, the North Division, is the only division that has seven teams. Every other division has eight. So it means just three teams to go for divisional breakdowns. That'd be the Montreal Canadiens, the Ottawa Senators, and the Toronto Maple Leafs. All three teams, very interesting storylines heading into it. Let's get started here, and we will begin with the Montreal Canadiens. So Montreal this past season, in 71 regular season games, finished with a 31-31-9 record. 31 wins, 31 regular losses, and then 9 shootout and or overtime losses. Now, Montreal is a very interesting team. So over the course of the regular season, they had a -9 goal differential. But they were the second last team to make the cut of the 24 teams that had an opportunity for the play-in for the NHL playoffs. They beat the Pittsburgh Penguins in a very shocking series. Then they pushed the Philadelphia Flyers all the way to 7 games in that series, losing to them in the final game. And, you know, a lot of growth for some of their younger players. Nick Suzuki, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, Carey Price looked back to form. This team had a lot of hearts in that series and a lot to build off of. Now, let's get to some of the additions and some of the things that this team did. So, the big one that they kind of kicked everything off was Max Domi. You know, played for them last year, wasn't necessarily the happiest of campers, wasn't being used in a role that he liked. Montreal's looking to get bigger on the wings. They had some of their centermen. So they went out and they made a trade with the Columbus Blue Jackets. They sent Max Domi to his third team now in his NHL career in exchange for right-handed right winger Josh Anderson, a guy who only played in 20-something games this past season and amassed 1 goal and 3 assists when he came back from injury. So, why would they make this trade? One, Max Domi was unhappy with the way he was being utilized on the team. He wants to play center, and they were playing their two young centers, Jesperi Kotkaniemi and Nick Suzuki. Philip Deneau was their third-line center, forcing Domi out onto the wing or fourth line center. I don't think he actually played fourth line center, but he was forced onto the wing in a position that he wasn't comfortable playing. Two, Montreal needed size. They needed size. They needed scoring on the wing. Josh Anderson was a guy who had come up in trade conversations before with some other Canadian teams. Montreal just seemed to have the perfect player in mind. I know that Columbus wanted to get some goal scoring on the wings as well, maybe get a little bit more skilled and less, you know, get a little smaller, a little bit more speedy and fast. Max Domi's a perfect fit there. Now, we'll have to wait and see until the NHL season unfolds. But up until this point, and we'll see how this ages, but I don't think Montreal wins this trade. Having said that, I think Montreal got exactly what they wanted. They moved out a piece that they were never really going to utilize anyways. It's one of those things where if you're not a fan of the franchise, you go, why would they trade that player? But if you're a fan, if you watch them, if you follow them constantly, you understand why. A lot of teams make trades like this. They trade away good players. Think of the Edmonton Oilers trade with the New Jersey Devils. Edmonton trades Taylor Hall, who ends up being like a heart winner 2 seasons later, with the Devils. They get defenseman Adam Larson back. Why would Edmonton make this trade? Did Edmonton win that trade? No. But was it a trade that Edmonton needed to make because they already had so many number one overall or high-end forwards and they needed defensemen? Yes. They found a suitable team to trade with. They made the one-for-one deal. Montreal did the exact same thing here, except a lot of people think that they actually got a lot better of a piece than Adam Larson back. Josh Anderson, just 2 years removed from a 27-goal campaign. You know who else is removed from a 27-goal campaign? Max Domi, hilariously enough. So I think both players are going to fit into their respective teams, franchises, and actually both do well. I think Max Domi is going to be a better player this season. I think he's going to thrive in the role that he's going to be there. He's a perfect fit to kind of fill in. He's going to get to play with either guys like Pierre-Luc Dubois or Alexander Texier or Oliver Bjorkstrand or Cam Atkinson. I think he's a really feisty player. I think he's one of the few players that has like that heart and soul that just leaves it all on the ice each and every time. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, not all players do that, but he's a guy that really shows his emotion and really shows his care for the game, you know, very similarly to his dad, Ty Domi. But nevertheless, Montreal gets a guy in Josh Anderson. Big size right-hand shot winger they need. Their centermen up the middle are young, they are skilled, and Montreal believes in them. That's Nick Suzuki, Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Now on the right side, you've got Brendan Gallagher, who was already part of that team, another very feisty, good heart and soul player. You've got Josh Anderson. And then they went out and acquired another right winger and Tyler Toffoli. Now, if you remember, Tyler Toffoli last year played on the Los Angeles Kings, was traded to the Vancouver Canucks, A lot of people thought he was going to stay in Vancouver, sign there. He evidently doesn't, goes over to Montreal. He gives them another element, another tertiary scorer on that team. Now you're three right wingers deep, all capable of scoring 20 plus goals in the NHL. You couple that with the fact that outside of Domi, they didn't really lose a lot of pieces. They've solidified themselves in net. They went out and they made a trade for goaltender backup goalie Jake Allen, who was the backup and actually started a couple playoff games for them this last season in St. Louis. So now you've got Carey Price. If they feel like they're working him too hard, they've got a good, reliable backup goalie that can go in on any given night and give this team an opportunity to win. Defensively, you re-signed a right-hand shot defenseman, Jeff Petrie, who is a nightmare to play against. On top of that, you've still got Shea Weber. They went out and signed Joel Edmondson, who is a depth left-hand shot defenseman. This team is deeper. This team is a little bit wiser. They are now tougher to play against with the size additions, and you've got a lot of leaders there to help mold some of the younger guys, like a Jesperi Kotkaniemi or Nick Suzuki. You've got to remember too, this team didn't lose all of its, you know, speed and skill. You've still got Suzuki, you've still got Jonathan Drouin, you've still got Philip Deneau, who's one of the better two-way centers in hockey. Montreal is a team that I know they finished fifth in the Atlantic this past season, and the goal differential wasn't necessarily great, but your young players have a chance to develop. You might get the Josh Anderson of old. You've got depth in net. And you're poised to now play a little bit easier competition. I wouldn't say easier competition, but these are going to be games that Montreal has to go up against. You don't have to play Boston anymore. You don't have to play Tampa Bay anymore. They did not play well, amazingly enough. They got swept by the Detroit Red Wings last year, a team that finished dead last in the NHL last year. Now there's that whole mantra not there. They get to get up every game against Ottawa, get up every game against Toronto, who they've had incredible success against. You know, some of the teams out west, I think that they have a better opportunity than, I think that, you know, they're more of a team than Edmonton. It's just a matter of stopping those two superstars. I tweeted this out. I genuinely believe six of the seven teams in this division could walk away winning it. I honestly believe that. And Montreal is one of them. Montreal is a team that could very easily, if that team gels, if everything works right for that team, if that defensive core is what it's built with Weber, Petrie, and if your goaltending is on point as it always is, and up front, if all your young players continue to grow and your offseason additions just complement them, this is going to be a nightmare of a team to play against. Gone are the days where Montreal is a team that can be pushed around. Because you've got Anderson. Toffoli's not fun to play against. Gallagher's not fun to play against. Deneau's a great centerman in the league. And now you've got two budding centermen in Suzuki and Kotkaniemi. I know I've said their names a whole lot here. But two guys that are only getting better as they get older, bigger, stronger, and more adept to the league. I really like what Montreal did. I know I made fun of them for the whole Corey Perry thing. The only reason I did that is because I got so much heat on Twitter for it. When I saw him waved, I just thought it was kind of funny. But nevertheless, like, Montreal's no joke. Like, let me get something straight here. Montreal could very well rival first overall in this division. Very well so. But if all those things come together, they've still got one of the best goalies in the world in Carey Price. They've got a capable backup now who they can go to on a regular basis. I'm telling you, if everything works out, look out for Montreal. All right, next team we're going to get to here is the Ottawa Senators. So Ottawa this past season knew it was more of a rebuilding year. They finished 7th in the Atlantic Division. They made a couple of really big trades. They got a couple of really good draft picks. They stocked up 25-34-12 record, a minus 52 goal differential. But again, you've got to remember, rebuilding season for them. This year, they had the 3rd overall picks, the 5th overall picks. They selected Tim Stützle, the German phenom who just played in the World Junior Hockey Championships. Looked incredible. I believe he was like the tournament's top forward. And then left-hand defenseman Jake Sanderson from the United States. Another big, strong defenseman who's just going to go so well with that team. Now, Ottawa, you know, you've got to look at, you know, things in perspective. And I've said this about a couple of teams so far. And there's a lot of hype in Ottawa. And I remember talking about this in an earlier podcast about having all these draft picks and making all these signings. And yes, they went out and they acquired Derek Stefan in a trade. They signed Evgeny Dadonov to a contract. They brought in a couple guys. Some of their players are returning. They signed Matt Murray to a contract extension. So they've got a goalie of the future now for this team. You know, there's going to be a lot of different pieces coming into this team. They've got some NHL caliber talent on this team for sure. Derek Stepan, a center they acquired from the Arizona Coyotes in exchange for a second round pick. They also took on a little bit of cap with the Marin Gabrick trade. They brought in Braden Coburn from the Tampa Bay Lightning. They also got a second round pick. So essentially, they got a second round pick and then took a second round pick and traded it and got a centerman who could they put into their lineup. You know, this is a team that's I'd love to see how they develop. Let's see how some of their other guys fit in. They also let go of forward Anthony Duclair, who is a guy who scored 20-plus goals for them. But they bring in Evgeny Dadonov. He played in Florida over the last couple of years. He was a big part of, you know, their top six there. Stepan's there. You've got Artem Anisimov. And Tim Stützle, you know, this phenom German center who was lighting it up at the World Juniors, was lighting it up overseas. There's a reason he went third overall. He looks to be the real deal. You've also got another couple really young players that you're still building around. Colin White's a guy you're still building around. I love Connor Brown there. Thomas Chabot, defenseman, left-hand shot defenseman, who's an absolute stud on the back end. Also, Brady Tkachuk, you know, he was tenacious last year. Didn't realize he had, you know, almost 50 points. He had 20-plus goals, 20-plus assists. He hits everything that moves. If he's anything like Matthew Tkachuk, which he is in Calgary, he is just a nightmare to play against, and he's only getting older. He's only getting bigger. He's only getting stronger. He's only getting better. I will say this. Take every victory you can. Right, last season was a tough season for Ottawa. You had two top five picks. I know one of them came from San Jose, but that was a rebuilding year. This is still a rebuilding year. You know, you are dealing with players in this division, including Austin Matthews, John Tavares, Mitch Marner, Elias Pettersson, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau. This division is loaded with superstar talent. Like, this division could harbor four or five of the top 10 point getters in the NHL this year. I'm being dead serious. Austin Matthews almost led the league in goals last year. McDavid and Draisaitl were like 1-2 in points. Mitch Marner, when he got hot at one point, he had a 94-point season just a year ago. John Tavares had 47 goals one year. I mean, the division is loaded with superstars. Elias Pettersson in Vancouver's only getting better too. Like, there is a lot of top-tier talent in this division that you have to play on multiple occasions. Like, you're going to have to play the Montreal Canadiens in all of their depth 10 times. You're going to have to play Austin Matthews and Tavares like 9 times. You're going to have to play McDavid, Draisaitl another 8-9 times. There are no rest days. You are the rest day team. If you're looking at it from an outsider perspective, you're looking at Toronto, Vancouver, who went on a really deep playoff run, Edmonton, who's loaded with talent, Toronto, Montreal, Winnipeg, for Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, other guys who could easily lead the league in points and goals. You're the team that teams are looking forward to take a break from. I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm not saying it in any stretch. But you're the team that finished the lowest in any of the divisions, 7th in the Atlantic last year. You're a rebuilding team. Some of the draft picks that you have, some of the younger players are still developing. You're still getting there. You might surprise. A lot of teams have done that. They take a year, rebuild, move forward. All of a sudden, look at the New York Rangers. Right, New York Rangers, another team that was supposed to be rebuilding last year, just got a plethora of young talent. They pushed for a playoff spot last year. Toronto in 2016, when they tanked, they got Austin Matthews. The next year, they went from very last place in the NHL to playoffs in 6 games against the President's Trophy winning Washington Capitals. Like, it happens. But I'm just saying, take every victory when you can, take it all in stride, understand it's a rebuilding season. Like I said, you might surprise people based on your play, based on your work ethic. I've heard players in that organization from quotes from other analysts saying that they're not here for another rebuilding season. They're not here to quote unquote feel it out. They're trying to push to become better. They're trying to push. The goal is to make the playoffs. Absolutely it is. I'm just saying, if it doesn't happen, because only the top four teams in each division make the playoffs. Four teams, each division, four divisions, 16 teams, regular playoff format. But if you're telling me that you're going to beat out one of the four teams that are likely to make the playoffs, like a Toronto, like a Montreal, like a Winnipeg, like a Vancouver, like a Calgary, guess what? That's five teams right there. There's only seven. So three teams of the seven aren't making the playoffs. I tweeted earlier. I said six of the seven teams in this division could easily win this thing. The reason I said six is because I don't think Ottawa is one of them. Not yet. Not yet, at least. They're doing a lot of incredible things. They're signing players to really good contracts. They're bringing in NHL talent. They're able to roster a team while still harboring and bringing up their younger players. They've still got a ton of prospects in their draft pool. They've got a goalie inked in for the foreseeable future. This team is on the rise. They're in a really good spot right now, despite everything going on with their owner. Having said all that, take this year in stride. If it's a rebuilding year, if it is a learning year, if it's an opportunity to give your younger players a chance to know what it's like going against top-tier talent on a game-by-game basis. You're going three straight games against the Toronto Maple Leafs, three straight games against Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, John Tavares, William Nylander. Then you got to go three games against Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser. Then you've got to deal with McDavid and Draisaitl for two games. Then you got to go deal with the Habs and all their additions that they had. Oh, and then you got to go deal with the Jets for another three games and Mark Scheifele and Nikolai Ehlers and Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine. And like, there's a lot of talent in this division. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying it's a great year to learn to play against top end talent. You're never going to get to see McDavid and Draisaitl 10 times again because you're in opposite. You're normally in opposite conferences. You only see them twice a year. Now you get to see them 8-9 times a season. That, take it in stride, learn everything you can. If you happen to go on a streak, because it's a short season, and when you go on a streak in a short and condensed season, it's a lot more meaningful to go on a 8-0-1 stretch in 56 games than it is in 82 games. So, Ottawa, there's a lot of great pieces I like there. A lot of young, incredible prospects. They brought in NHL talent. They still have draft picks. Just take the wins when you can this year. Learn what you've got with your team. And then moving forward, all your players are doing is growing and getting better for the future. Okay, and let's finish here with the team I'm probably thinking for the majority of you listening right now, you're going to want me to get to. And that is the Toronto Maple Leafs. So let's go over last year. The Toronto Maple Leafs in 70 games finished with 36 wins, 25 losses, and 9 overtime or shootout losses. They finished third in the Atlantic, lost in the play-in series to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Now, the big issue with this team in the offseason was finally addressed, and that was their defense. Their defense was not very deep. It didn't have a lot of playmakers. Really, it just wasn't tough to play. Like, they were an easy defense to play against. A lot of times, they got hemmed in their end. They were not great defensively. Despite all of that, though, they had a plus goal differential last year, plus 11. They're one of the highest scoring teams in the league. I think they were the third highest scoring team. And all they have done is built upon that or kept the core intact and added toughness to their team. So the big questions that you have for the Toronto Maple Leafs, like I said, one, their defense. Defensively, they made some big changes. Tyson Barry is no longer there. He was a defensive liability. He goes over to Edmonton. Maybe he's a better fit in Edmonton, but a lot of what I talked about with Montreal and Jonathan and Max Domi just not being a great fit there, very similarly to Tyson Barry. Toronto went out, traded away Nazem Kadri in order to get Tyson Barry on defense. They had to trade away a really good center, a player that they all really liked, had some suspension issues, but they brought in a right-hand shot, puck-moving defenseman who at the time in Colorado was considered an elite defender. Not a great year for Tyson Barry. Was getting beat oftentimes. Looked like he didn't have his footing in his own end. The speed for some reason went, just never got comfortable in Toronto. And I think it just had to do with the fact that expectations were so high of him that of course he was never going to live up to it. Now maybe he kind of rebuilds that and gets some of his mojo back in Edmonton. But he's out into the system now. TJ Brody. TJ Brody is a left-hand shot defenseman who specifically plays the right side of the ice. He's played in Calgary over the last, I don't know how many years. He was the guy that was paired up with their captain and defenseman, Mark Giordano, on the right side. He is the more defensive defenseman. He is the safer bet on defense. He is also one of the best puck movers in the NHL. Very underrated because he's not a guy that's going to pile up points, but he seems to be a perfect fit so far with left-hand shot defenseman Morgan Rielly. More of a comparable guy to Rielly's game, more of what Toronto needed. And funny story too, before Toronto made that trade with Colorado for Tyson Barrie, there was a deal in place with the Calgary Flames that included Nazem Kadri and, you guessed it, TJ Brody. Nazem Kadri nixed the trade, said he didn't want to go to Calgary. The trade, I think a little bit later on, came, and he ends up going to Colorado instead. Funny enough, though, how, you know, it all kind of works out, comes full circle. Kadri's still in Colorado. TJ Brody now comes over to Toronto. That, they also added some toughness. Wayne Simmonds. Right-hand winger, big, strong, gritty guy. Just 3 years removed from 20-plus goals, you know, a significant part playing when he was with the Philadelphia Flyers. Had some injury problems, had a little bit of a tough stretch with the Buffalo Sabres and the New Jersey Devils when he signed there. But this is a guy who is reinvigorated. He's excited about coming to Toronto. I believe he's only like, not only, but you know, he's just over the age of 30. He's 31, 32. He thinks he's got a lot of hockey left. He signed a 1 year, $1.5 million deal with the team. And this is going to be a guy that he understands his role. He's like, I'm here to provide grit, toughness, and a little bit of a scoring touch. He's diverse. He can play on the fourth line, which is where he is right now. He can play on the second line if he needs to, if injuries happen, if COVID happens. He is a guy that can move up and down the lineup. He's capable of playing 15, 16 minutes a night. The thing is, he just doesn't have to be, but he makes Toronto up front harder to play against. Another guy who makes them harder to play against, Zach Bogosian on defense. Zach Bogosian signed a deal with Tampa Bay last year when they went on their cup run. They had some injuries, played a very pivotal role on that team. Didn't put up a ton of points, 4 assists in the playoffs, but played some big minutes when they needed to. He's big, he's strong, he's physical. You do not want to mess with Zach Bogosian. Ergo, you don't want to mess with the Toronto Maple Leafs defense. Now they've got Bogosian, they've got Jake Muzzin, TJ Brody's tough to play against, Justin Hall's a bigger guy. All of a sudden, Toronto isn't this push around, you know, easy to deal with defense. We'll see if it all transpires and if it actually comes to fruition. But for the time being right now, on paper, they look bigger, they look tougher, they look more defensive. A couple other guys they brought over from the KHL, Mikko Lettinen. If you haven't heard of him before, he was the KHL's Defenseman of the Year last year. He is a puck-moving defenseman. He's looked great at camp so far. He still needs a little bit of work to refine his game and get adjusted to the NHL level, but talks are he looks awesome, he looks great, and he'll be a big piece of this team moving forward. They still have Travis Dermott. They still have Morgan Rielly, Jake Muzzin, Justin Hall, Rasmus Sandin, Timothy Liljegren. The reason I'm saying all these names was depth at defense was Toronto's issue last year and a couple of years ago. All of a sudden, you go 8 defensemen deep, maybe 9, who you feel comfortable with putting in your NHL roster. That's a good thing to have. Also on the offense, Toronto went out and made a signing. Jumbo Joe Thornton, a big centerman who apparently is going to play wing for this team with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. Just another element of wisdom, another guy who comes in and can set that locker room presence. He is a great veteran to have, a guy that people can learn from. He's played in almost 1,700 games. He's one of the greatest passers in the history of the sport. He comes over on a 1 year minimum contract at $700,000. You know, he's looking to win a cup. It's not like a guy goes down to Florida to play out their final years because it's sunny, it's warm, you make a couple extra bucks. He's coming home to be close to family. He's coming home because he's wanted to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's from St. Thomas. And he has an opportunity to win a Stanley Cup. And honestly, he does. I mean, I'm not saying Toronto's the favorite to win the Cup, but when you've got a roster that still has Austin Matthews, John Tavares up the middle, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, 30-goal scorer, over point-per-game guy, 47-goal scorer, 47-goal scorer, you're going to give yourself an opportunity. One of the questions, though, about this team, their drive, their motive, their work ethic. Some nights they come in and look like the most dominant team we've ever seen. Other nights they get slapped around and there's no focus, there's no drive there. Apparently this offseason, the head coach, Sheldon Keefe, has been implementing a lot more of a hard-working attitude towards his team. They do not want to be pushed around. They do not want to have nights off. They want to be a team that teams go in not thinking you're going to have a great chance to win if they're on their good, if they're on their game. So that has been a big thing. And I think the presences of Joe Thornton and Bogosian and Wayne Simmonds this offseason and TJ Brody are going to help cement that. A better culture too. But I think the young guys like Matthews and Marner are starting to grow a little bit. I think they understand now we can't take days off. We can't slack around. We can't think, oh, we're too cool for this. This is time to get serious. They're making the big bucks. Time to start earning it. And finally, we've talked about their offense. We've talked about their defense, their goaltending. Frederik Andersen, a guy who was scrutinized last year, didn't have his best season, you know, let in a weak goal in the postseason in that game five against Columbus. This is a contract year for him. This is, you know, a big season to bounce back and prove that he's one of the better goalies in the league. Toronto has stability in net. Not only that, they've got Frederik Andersen. You know, they started last season with Michael Hutchinson, who was brought in for the team to be kind of that fourth goalie, but he was put on waivers. But last season, if you remember, this team addressed the backup goalie situation. Now you've got Frederik Andersen, your starting goaltender. You've got Jack Campbell, who you acquired in a trade from the LA Kings last year as your backup. And then you went on, you signed veteran goaltender and backup Aaron Dell as your third option in net. So now Toronto feels comfortable with not one, not two, but three goalies who could go in there and at least be NHL-capable goalies that you could give the team an opportunity to win. But this is Freddie's year. This is Frederik Andersen's year to get back to that form of being able to go in on a nightly basis and show why he's one of the better goalies, why he thinks he should earn a bigger contract extension with this team. There were a lot of talks about, is Frederik Andersen going to re-sign with the Leafs? Do they think it's going to be too much money? Is he worth it? He's over the age of 30 now, and he's, you know, on the 31, 32 age. So this is a big year for him. It's a big year for Leaf goaltending. I think Toronto has done a better job up front, being tougher to play against, which means defensively they might be a little bit better, which hopefully means their goaltending improves from that as well. It's always been hype. It's always been optimism in Toronto, but it looks like management coaching has really, you know, taken a big step forward and actually made the adjustments. There've always been big talk in Toronto about being tougher to play against, getting stronger, getting bigger, and being a harder team to go in on a night-by-night basis and play against. But they have actually made moves, bringing in Zach Bogosian, signing TJ Brody, two defensemen who play the right side, Wayne Simmonds as a forward. You traded away Kasperi Kapanen and Andreas Janssen for cap issues. Players can step right on in there. You've got depth right up until the fourth line on this team that can go out each and every night and roll some lines. They're going to rely on their big boys. They're going to rely on the guys that they pay the most money to, but they've got depth all over this team. On paper, this should be a team that does very well this year, but this is the time to bring it all together. The depth is there. The defense is there. The veteran presence is there. The wisdom is there. The youth is there. The scoring is there. The talent is there. The goalie depth is there. Now it's time to bring it all together. We'll see how it all transpires this coming season. That is it for the 39th episode of the Second Thoughts podcast. The next time that I am on the podcast, this Friday, we will have NHL games, real NHL hockey to break down, to talk about the first start of the first couple days of the year, what it's been like, how are teams making it so far, what's it like playing in their home arenas but with no fans or limited fans. All of this is super exciting, incredible stuff, and I can't wait for it to all get started tomorrow night. Thank you very much for listening to the episode. If you want to listen to prior episodes or follow me and follow along with every episode that gets uploaded on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, subscribe, rate, review, do whatever you got to do on social media, on Instagram, Twitter, at Second Thoughts P. And like I said, Friday, we will have NHL hockey to talk about. Until then, that's a wrap.